Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Your boy Sloan Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen. In a world full of followers, be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women. Everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. We got a tremendous episode today, ladies and gentlemen. Not only do I know this tremendous athlete in life, you know, I think his views, we should all take a step back and look at. You know, I think everybody across the world, especially in America, is looking at perceptions and taking them in their entirety. You know, this young man left a comment on one of my posts, and it really struck in my heart because there's true relevance to what he's saying. With that being said, I want to welcome the one and only Anthony Lamar Tolliver from the Memphis Grizzlies. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Just finished practice and on our bus on the way back to the hotel, so forgive any random loud background noises.
It's all good, my friend. You know, I met you several years ago. You went to high school with my son. You came from a predominantly white community. You know, what was it like for Anthony Lamar Tolliver growing up in the early years of your life in Springfield, Missouri?
You know, honestly, as a kid, you just kind of grow up and you just know your environment. Like, you don't really know any different, right? You know, you just kind of go with what you know, and you have your friends, you have your people you hang out with, you have your, you know, routines and everything else. And so, you know, as a kid, it wasn't really something that, you know, I really didn't think too much about it. Yeah, I noticed that, you know, my skin looked different than a lot of my friends' skin, but it just wasn't a big deal. You know, whenever I was about 6 or 7 years old, there was the first time I experienced racism was, you know, maybe the first time I was really aware of kind of some of the differences in, you know, my life and my friend's life. But yeah, I mean, that was, you know, for the most part, I mean, you know, everybody, you know, for the most part treated me good. And, you know, I didn't, you know, like I said, the whole hate in people's hearts is taught. It's not, that is not natural. That is not what you come out of the womb feeling. So yeah, I mean, that's how it was. And it just absolutely, you know, I enjoyed my time growing up.
See, I love that you put it that way, because when I was a kid, and I've posed this question, we're friends on Facebook, I'm sure you've seen it many times, I posed the question, when we were kids, did color matter? And it truly didn't. So why does it matter
Not at
now,
all.
Anthony? Why does it matter now?
Well, I mean, I think that as a kid, you know, obviously you don't know any... You know, you don't really know much, right? You know, you're just kind of living in a utopia, right? You just kind of have your friends and you have your family and you have your mom and dad. And hopefully you have your mom and dad, you know, both. And you just kind of live your life. You know, the rest is just kind of, you're just trying to make it work. And, you know, now, you know, as we get to being adults and stuff, you know, unfortunately, you go back, you learn history, you learn the history of different things, and then you also have experience, right? That's another factor is experience in dealing with different types of people with different views, different biases, and different ways of thinking. And it exposes you to that whole thing. You know, I think I wish it was never an issue. You know, I think that's everybody could kind of wish it would never be an issue. But you know, for right now, you know, we can't really say that exclusively. You know, have things gotten better over the years? Absolutely. Over the decades, absolutely. Just been, you know, definitely making strides towards, I think, mostly in the right direction. But, you know, always there's, you know, there's definitely more to be done and continue to everybody grow and learn and, you know, just have, you know, empathy and learn other people's perspectives and, you know, don't just discount them just because they disagree with you or just because it's a different view than you. You know, for me, that's been a huge part of this whole process. This whole year has been, you know what, like, I'm not going to listen. First of all, I don't really watch the news because almost all of it's biased, right? but, you know, just trying to be as non-biased as possible and try to hear other people's views, right? Like, it's, you know, too many people just shut the other side down automatically if it's, like, if it's different than what they believe. And then they're like, oh, you're wrong. Well, am I wrong? Like, nah, like, I don't just speak to emotions. Like, emotions can play a part in different things, but it's like, you know, if your whole argument is based on emotions, then yes, it, you know, hey, that's, you know, you probably need to have some facts to back up your emotions, but, you know, but emotions are relevant in this space too, because we're humans. So it's not just facts. It's emotion mixed with facts.
I agree with that. You know, I'm in the sports industry. It just happens to be the combat sports industry. You're in the, you know, National Basketball Association. You know, we're people that are around diverse cultures. We're people that live a life that not many people are truly privy to. I mean, what we get is an opportunity to deal with cultures and different races from all over the world, and we have a different take on life. You know, and I don't see the systematic decline in the sport. I don't see it in a lot of ways in life. But nowadays, you really can't speak your mind thoroughly, because if you do, it can cost you your job. You look at LeBron James right now. He's under tremendous scrutiny for some of his remarks. And I think it's terrible, because in this country, we're allowed freedom of speech, freedom of expression, and freedom of opinion. Now, I don't think everybody has to agree with everybody, but we can debate without hate. When you look at the Black Lives Matter situation in a whole, how do you disseminate it for yourself? Because I'm like you. I don't believe in the organization, but I do believe in aspects of the cause.
Yeah, so just to be clear, you know, the organization, what they stand for, you know, what they, you know, some of their core values do not align with my core values. And they don't align with a lot of people's core values who are a part of the movement. So there's, to me, there's two separate factions here. There's people who believe that Black Lives Matter. Right? That's the movement. That is the people who are trying to change some of the, you know, some of the policies, some of the things that are, that have been, you know, unfair in the past, unfair in the present, and trying to change that for the future. Right? Then there's, you know, the people who are a part of the actual group and who, you know, have their own set of core values and things that they, you know, determine to be what is important to them. Once again, and it can be confusing, right? You know, if you say Black Lives Matter, it's just kind of like, you know, hey, everybody puts you in that same group, you know? But, you know, I think that I would actually say vast majority of the people who say it and believe it are a part of the movement and are not associating with themselves with the group. Like I said, there are certain things that they are fighting for that, hey, I'm with. But their core values is what, you know, is what separates, is why I separate myself from saying, hey, I'm a part of the movement or the group, or sorry, of the group, but I'm a part of the movement, right? Yeah. There's a big, big difference.
Yeah, see, because most people don't know, and I'm not sure if you even know this, if you go to the Black Lives Matter website and you donate, it takes you directly to a site called Act Blue. And if you look into it and you do your research, you'll find out that major contributions have been made to Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden. How much of this aspect that we're seeing in front of us do you believe is politically motivated?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, politicians and you know, Democratic, Republican, every faction to me, I'm not a big politics guy. And the reason why is because I feel like politicians look out for politicians in their groups, and they don't look out for the people, which is what politics is supposed to be about, right? I truly don't believe that generally, right? Not to say that individuals in each party can't, right? Once again, I try not to ever generalize anything, but I think as a whole, you know, when Obama was in office, you know, it was, well, you know, Republicans band together to try to block everything he did, right? Why? Because he was a Democrat. Like, even if it was good for people, right? And then guess what? Democrats aren't any better, right? Because the same thing happens with freaking Trump. It's like, well, everybody, oh, it's Trump. He's a Republican. Oh, we can't vote for it, or we can't say we want it because he's a Republican. We don't want anything good to happen while he's in office, because then the Republicans will look good. That's how I view politics, right? So when it comes to, once again, like I said, the movement compared to the group, right? The group, you know, I've heard a lot of different, you know, things about the group and everything else. Like I said, I don't even need to look past the website to tell you I don't associate myself with the group, right? That's all I need to see. I don't need to see any research. They'll never see a dollar from me. You know what I'm saying? So you know, for me, it's like, okay, well, here's the deal. It's like, you know, do I, you know, like I said, I believe in the statement, and I do believe that in certain cases, black lives are looked at differently than other people's lives. And so for me, it's just about, hey, getting to where we're all, you know, hey, people say all lives matter, right? We completely agree. Completely agree. But just because I say Black Lives Matter does not mean that I don't believe all lives matter. That's what we want. We want, just like we said, we want to live in a world where color doesn't matter, right? But
yeah,
until everybody is looked at equally by everybody, that's not going to be the case. So that's what, you know, that's what we're saying is like, hey, you know, like there's certain cases and certain times where it's like, man, you know, yeah, does the media sensationalize it sometimes? Absolutely. Absolutely. They sensationalize a lot of stuff, and they are not innocent in making things sometimes look even worse than they are, right? That's absolutely true. That's the media, right? They are. I'm not a big fan. You know what I'm saying? Like there's a lot. There's a lot to this that makes it very complicated. And so it's not an easy subject. It's not something that you can easily just be like, oh, well, this is right and everything else is wrong. It's like, no, like there's parts of this that are way more complicated than just saying, you know, Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization. They're this and that, or this and that. It's like, well, all right, like, that's what you believe, President. That's cool, right? You know, like there's definitely some things that, you know, that I, like I said, that do not agree with what they do. And then there's some things that absolutely I do agree with, right? Same thing with Trump and everybody else. It's like, man, there's not an absolute right and an absolute wrong to me. Like when it comes to these different groups and different beliefs, and it's like sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong, right? Period. I don't care who you are. So that's why it's like whenever people have these allegiances to even political parties, to me, a lot of times I'm like, bro, like just Republicans don't have all the answers. Democrats don't have all the answers. Like, period. Period, point blank, right? Like, that's just how I feel.
Let me ask you a question, Anthony. And it's kind of an elephant in the room question, but, you know, I feel like I gotta ask because I'm a journalist. You know, do you think that after the George Floyd incident, I can understand the outrage of the police officers not being charged or given third degree murder charges. But do you feel that when the charges were upgraded to second and first degree murder, do you believe that the riots, the looting, and all aspects that ensued after took away from the cause, took away from the aspect that the black Americans were truly fighting for?
So that is also, yeah, that's definitely something that I have, you know, maybe not as, I don't know. I guess when it comes to the protests, right, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Any day of the week, anytime you have something that you want to, you know, protest and talk about and change, that's literally what America is all about. Like, seriously, you go back to the beginning of the United States, the freaking Boston Tea Party. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a part of our DNA, right? Like, that's just what people do in order to get crap done sometimes is you protest. And, you know, sometimes that does turn into rioting, right? So do I think that rioting and looting, obviously I'm not for looting at all, right? Like, I don't get that thought process. That definitely does, that has the ability to take away from a real cause and a real something that's actually really being done. But I think, you know, just from, you know, what I've seen and what I've heard and what the research on, it's like majority of the people who are looting have nothing to do with the actual movement, right? Have nothing to do with the actual people who are wanting to see change. They're literally just opportunists, right? And, you know, I know everybody's heard of Antifa and all different stuff. It's like, you know, like I never really believed in that type of stuff until the last 6 months, right? Like I was like, oh yeah, okay, cool, whatever. Like people talk about, oh yeah, okay. You know, I kind of put it in a conspiracy theorist type box, right? Like, oh, whatever. Some group, you know, whatever that's out here just causing chaos, right? I just was like, yeah, whatever, right? And then I started seeing it with my own eyes, right? And it's different when you see it with your own eyes, right? It's you hear it from somebody, that's okay. But then you start seeing it with your own eyes. Now, you know, everybody obviously has camera phones, and everybody started to pull out their camera phones in every single situation now, right? So everything is caught on camera, everything. And, you know, social media is at its peak right now as far as things being shared. So that's a whole nother faction of things that is actually can be terrible. You know, there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of stupid stuff that's being passed around on social media. But, you know, this is the first time I've ever seen it with my own eyes, is these groups pulling up in, like, vans, organized, like, groups with freaking uniforms on that come and just start reaping havoc. And plus, I know a lot of people in Minneapolis, right? I played there for 3 years, right? So I know a lot of the people who were there protesting, who were literally a part of those peaceful protests of the actual wanting to, you know, get some stuff done. And they're like literally telling me firsthand stories, not, oh, I heard about this. They're like, no, we saw it with our own two eyes. These people and then I see some of the statistics and some of the, you know, I think Minnesota governor said, you know, 85% of the people that were arrested on this one given night were from out of town, right? So that's the type of stuff. So it's like, yes, it absolutely does take away from it. But that's the point of, I think, the people who are doing this for the most part, right, that they don't care about the movement. They don't care about getting something done. They just see an opportunity to wreak havoc, and they do it. And it absolutely now then the media comes in, they say, oh, the cameras go straight to the fires, straight to the fights, straight to the violence, and right away from the real things that are going to actually help the cause, right? So yeah, I completely agree that the looting and the rioting and all that stuff just has a super negative, you know, connotation a lot of times when it comes to actually getting stuff done.
Now, let me ask you this, you know, because it's no secret that Antifa and BLM conjoined and became one. Do you think at that point that it took away from the cause and created a revolution?
I didn't hear the first part of that question. What did you say? I'm sorry.
I said, we all know it's no secret that BLM and Antifa had conjoined. Do you think it took away from the cause and created a revolution?
And what do you mean by they conjoined?
They became one.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, they became one. They conjoined organizations.
Oh, I have not seen that personally, so I can't really speak to that. But I mean, actually, if you have like information on that, I would love to see it.
Oh yeah, sure.
I didn't realize that, you know, did they create like a joint venture agreement or something?
Yeah, they basically conjoined forces to continue the protest, to continue the dismantling of some certain cultures and aspects of our country. You know, I like your thoughts, and I like who you are in life, because you're a strong Christian, godly man, and I'm a godly man in my walk. But I want to ask you a question, and some of these questions are going to be hard, brother, and you don't have to answer them if you don't want, but I like to get a better perception into your thought process. What are your thoughts on reverse racism, and do you believe that demoralizing of other cultures has further added to this fire?
So the whole notion of reverse racism, it's an interesting concept, right? So
yes,
if you look up the definition of racism, actual racism requires power, right? It requires you to have the ability to, you know, inflict some sort of, you know, negative thing onto, you know, someone else. What most people are referring to whenever they say that, they're really speaking of bias, right? I think everybody has bias. But, you know, racism requires power to be able to inflict something on others. So that's when people talk about racism, you know, in America, it's, you know, it's obviously there's it's well documented that, you know, that black people were there were things that were completely against them due to, you know, without their ability to change it, laws and everything else, right? So when it comes to, you know, reverse racism, like I said, it's hard to really speak on that directly, because it's, you know, I don't really see an area where black people have more power than any other race. And I guess it doesn't have to just be black people when you say reverse racism, I guess, right? It could just be really any faction of people, but it's more so, you know, speaking to reverse, you know, whatever. It's just not even reverse anything. It's just bias, right? I wanted to address that first. But what was the rest of the question? Just so I can address that. I just wanted to speak on reverse racism first, though.
Do you think that some of this movement has caused demoralizing of other cultures?
And can you give me an example of what you're speaking to?
Okay, well, for example, that now, I mean, you and I are both in the sport, we're both public figures. I've had others reach out to me and say, why didn't you make your profile picture black, you know, on that special day to support BLM? Why didn't you do this? Why don't you support Black Lives Matter? Why don't you? And because I didn't, I've been attacked. My culture has been attacked. I've been ridiculed. I've been, I guess you could say, doxxed or doxing. People have contacted my employers and tried to get me fired, which I own my own radio show, so you can't get me fired. You know, the point I'm getting at is, now that certain aspects feel that their point has been heard, do you feel that they've taken it a step too far, or do you believe that the revolt or the cause or the actions that are being portrayed today should continue?
Well, I mean, I think that when it comes to the movement, I think that there are, you know, certain things that, you know, that I feel like the people who are a part of the movement want to see, you know, certain things implemented. I mean, these are things we're talking, you know, within the NBA specifically, right? Like, this is one organization out of, you know, many, 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 right? But, you know, we're just, you know, there's just, you know, certain times where it's like, okay, well, this is a time to, I think a lot of people see it as an opportunity, right? An opportunity to speak up about things that they kind of kept quiet, just to make sure that they don't ruffle too many feathers, right? But I think that the reason why the Black Lives Matter movement has been so powerful, once again, speaking of the movement, has been because now, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, black people that have felt like, you know, it wasn't the right time to speak up about certain things that were going on that weren't necessarily, you know, what was supposed to be happening, right? Or being looked over for jobs, you know, like consistently without any merit, right? Like, you know, it's just different things. And so this is happening all over, you know, the country, right? And so that's why I feel like the reason why this movement is continuing is because, you know, it's everybody's saying, okay, it's something that needs to be changed. The time is now, and we need to step up and say something. You know, when it comes to attacking other cultures, attacking people for what they believe, I mean, I've never supported that. I mean, that's stupid, right? Like, I mean, if you agree or disagree with somebody, it's like, well, I mean, that's unfortunately, we live in a culture where, you know, the cancel culture, right? Oh, you don't believe what I believe, so I'm going to cancel you. Right,
it's really happening.
It's ridiculous. It is, you know, and you know, to me, it's like I'm all for, you know, diversity, and I'm all for people having different lines of thought, as long as those lines of thought don't require, you know, hate, right? Like, I'm never going to, you know, say, oh yeah, you're entitled. Yeah, you're entitled to your opinion. You can hate whoever you want. You can do whatever you want. I'm not necessarily going to associate myself with you or, you know, whatever, but it's like, okay, everybody has their opinion and everybody has their ability to, and that's fine. And honestly, like, that might be the absolute, you know, best thing that's happened over the last few years, is I feel like more than ever, I feel like people are just starting to speak their minds more, right? Now, like you said, there's been some consequences for speaking their mind, right? In some cases, but you know, at the end of the day, it's like, okay, you, to me, it's like, okay, you treat people right, you know, you can have your opinion, right? And you move on, right? And it's like, that's me. That's what I feel, right? And if your opinion or your thought process is turned into action of some sort that is harmful to others, or if it turns into, you know, hate or whatever it may be, well then, yeah, I'm all for, you know, there's something being done about that. It's like, okay, well, if you are a healthcare worker and I, you know, there's video of you freaking dropping N-bombs and stuff like that, well, you should be fired. You know what I'm saying? Like seriously, because it's like, not like there's certain things that I agree with. Like, nah, like if you're going to be in charge of my health or somebody else that looks like me's health, and you think less of people who look like me, you absolutely shouldn't be that job. You shouldn't have that job. Right. Like, I agree with that. Like, but there's those cases are really, you know, I wouldn't say that's like, I don't care if some freaking guy at Home Depot, like, as a racist, I don't give a crap. You know, like, that doesn't affect my life. It really doesn't, right? If you guys want to push to get him fired, you do what you want to do, I guess. But I'm not about to call any hotline and say, hey, this guy is a racist, you need to fire him from Home Depot. I don't give a freaking crap if race has got to work somewhere, I guess.
Yeah, right. Let me ask you this question, Anthony, because I feel we're on the same wavelength. You know, I'm a lot older than you, but I'm a man of God, and I believe we're born pure. I believe that when we're born, we're completely innocent. We don't have thoughts. We don't have a care in the world. I personally don't like the word racism. In my heart and in my thought, the world is, though it's truly personal ignorance. Because it's taught at home. Hate is taught at home. What is your thought in that angle? Because I personally don't believe in racism. I believe in personal ignorance. I believe that the hate is taught at home and therefore brought out into the world. What's your take on that?
I mean, I completely agree. I mean, that was one of the first things I said, you know, in this interview was, you know, growing up, like, I didn't even really pay too much attention to the fact that I was, you know, one of the only black kids in school, right? And my friends treated me the same, right? Like, we were kids, like, first grade, second grade. That didn't really matter, right? Like, none of that crap mattered, right? And, you know, and then, yeah, you get older and experiences happen and stuff like that. But, you know, I actually do not use the word racism very often because I think that I think it's, in a lot of times, it's actually overused because, like I said, there's, words have meaning, right? And words, you know, words mean something. They actually have real, true definition. It's like, you know, if you're talking about somebody or labeling somebody something, it's like, and they don't actually fit that description, then, well, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, well, call them a racist, but it's like, no, it's just, that's just bias, right? Or that's just, you know, ignorance or whatever it may be. Like, I just try to call things what it is. Like, oh, well, certain, you know, certain things I will reserve the word racist for. You know, certain actions, certain things is totally right. But it's, to me, I just don't use it very often. I don't use it very often. I think it's overused, and I think that it can make the actual word and the actual racist actions be overlooked in some ways, because now some people, it's kind of like crying wolf, right? The boy who cried wolf, say, oh, that's racist, that's racist, that's racist. Well, then when something actually is racist, people are like, he thinks everything's racist. You know what I'm saying? Like, what a boy. So that's why I don't use it very often. Like, I'm just like, you know what? Like, I try to just call it what it is. And if it is, then it is. If it's not, then I try to identify what it is. And if it is just straight ignorance, like, I think that that's, you know, we're on, you know, on Facebook or whatever it may be. you know, you're talking with people, you're having different people with different opinions, you know, there's a lot of people who just say, oh, well, he's a racist. It's like, well,
yeah.
Like if I read the entire, you know, script.
Oh, or whatever, right? And I'm like,
I'm reading the same thing you're reading, and you're calling them a racist. I'm like, no, they just don't know, right? There's certain things where it's like certain people just don't know certain things, right? That's called ignorance. You know what I'm saying? And
exactly.
So that's why you see me on Facebook. I don't ever attack people, right? Like, you know, I just talk. I just talk, right? I'm a human. You're a human. I might look different than you. I might have different thoughts than you, but I'm not about to attack you for having different views. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you my perspective, right? If you respect my perspective, then maybe you disagree with my perspective. That's fine, right? But guess what? You hear my perspective, and now you can maybe understand that just because you see it one way doesn't mean it's actually that way. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's different perspectives. I might see something completely different than you see it because of our past experiences in different lives, right? Like, different experiences and different things. I might look at something and say, holy crap, that's crazy. You might look at it and say, holy crap, well, that's part of, you know, that happens, right? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm, you know, just specifically I'm talking about, like, let's say George Floyd, right? Like, I saw that situation, and I'm like, man, like, I put myself in his shoes, right? Because he looks like me, right? And also because I lived, you know, not far from there, right? So there's a bunch of different things that go through my head, and I know, you know, one of his best friends, right? So I look at that, and I might see a completely different situation than somebody says, oh, well, you know, he probably was just committing a crime or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, which maybe he was. I don't know. I don't know the details, right? I don't, you know, I do now, but at the time I'm like, you know, maybe I don't. What's up? How you doing? You know, so at the end of the day, you know, I just know, like, everybody has different perspectives because they have different real life experiences. And so even though you see the same thing I see, we might see it differently. And then, you know, just leave room for, you know, for grace, right? For each other, right? You, like I said, me and you don't agree on everything for sure, but hey, at the end of the day, it's all good.
We're still going to appreciate each other. We're still going to appreciate each other. We're still going to be friends, you know, and that's the wonderful thing about life is you can debate without hate. You can educate each other. One can learn from one another. You know, there's a situation that's going on right now I'd like to get your thoughts on. You know, the Deshaun Jackson controversy. You know, Deshaun Jackson is in the NFL, and he's had a former controversy with former NBA player Stephon Jackson. Do you think that this move to unity has caused some divide in some of the black communities?
Do I think that what? I didn't hear what you said.
Do you think that this situation that is portraying itself in front of us now has caused some divide in some of the black communities? As you got, you know, Steven Jackson, former player in the NBA, and Deshaun Jackson going at each other on their different thoughts. And to me, it's an aspect that doesn't need to be portrayed, but it's happening. Now, people from their own cultures are attacking each other on their own views. Do you think that we need to systematically educate these people and decrease this action, or do you think it's something that's going to continue to grow in and out of the sport?
Unfortunately, some days I feel, you know, really encouraged with our, you know, the future of of people. And then the other days I'm not, you know, super encouraged with where we're going and where we're at. Like I said, I just think that there's this thought process of, you know, people are just so, they get so offended, right? You know, by so much stuff. And hey, here's the deal. Like I said, my one thing is this. It's like, man, if it's based in hate, I can't roll with you, right? Like, I'm not about to sit here and defend you in any way, shape, or form if your views and what you're talking about is based in hate, right? Some people, I can't speak to the specific subject that, you know, Deshaun Jackson. I actually, to tell you the complete truth, I've been focused on so much other stuff. I'm not even sure. I don't even know what he said specifically. I do know generally what he said, right? But I don't know what he specifically said. So I can't say, oh, yay or nay, he was right or wrong. I'm assuming it was pretty bad because, you know, he got a lot of backlash, right? But then there were some people who defended him, right? And so defended him as in saying, you know, hey, like what he said is actually true or whatever, you know. But once again, it's like, well, I don't know. Like, I don't know. But what I am assuming is that, you know, some of the stuff that was talked about was based in hate, right? When you start having that, that's whenever it becomes super dangerous and super, you know, can be really divisive, and everything else. Now, like I said, if it's not based in hate, more power to you. If you have an opinion on something, go ahead and do your thing. You know what I'm saying? That's how I feel. When it's based in hate, that's whenever I'm going to probably speak up and say something and stand up for what's right, you know. And you can have an opinion. Hey, I know somebody that doesn't think Michael Jordan's the best player of all time. Guess what? They're entitled to their opinion, right? I have my opinion, and I have the reasons why I have my opinion. I do feel like if you had a straight debate between, you know, me saying Michael's the best and you saying LeBron is the best, I feel like I'm going to win that debate. You know, but it doesn't keep me from saying you're an idiot, you're wrong, you're just stupid because you believe LeBron's better than MJ. That's your opinion, but that's not based in hate. That's just an opinion. Let people have their opinions on different things. You know, if you can back it up, even better, you know. But it's like I said, that's how I kind of approach, you know, that is just like, hey, if it's based in hate, I'm not rolling with it. I'm not going to, you know, defend that way in, you know, any way, shape or form. But, you know, if it's just an opinion, if you don't believe that, you know, the sky is blue, okay, cool. Like, that's if that's what you want to do, right? If that's what you want to think, right? Like, do I know the sky is blue? It is. I'm looking at it. But, you know, if you want to think something else, that's fine.
Yeah, some people will. You know, I just want to ask
I'm sure there are some crazies out here that look at the sky and say, yeah, no, it's not blue. Okay.
There is, trust me.
Yeah, for sure.
There is, trust me, brother. You know, I want to ask you a couple more questions, and then we'll kind of wrap things up because I know you just got, you know, finished with practice. You know, it's kind of a hard question to ask, but I love your integrity, and I love who you are in life. You know, I've always appreciated you. I've never seen color. When I looked at you, I never see color when I look at anybody. But what are your thoughts on privilege? Do you believe that there is privilege, not just in the white community, but in all communities?
I think that there are multiple forms of privilege. I believe that there is male privilege, where a male can go into exact same situation as a female and get a better deal. There's especially when you're talking about salaries and different stuff like that, even sometimes being the way men are treated compared to women. When I walk down the street, I don't have to worry about, you know, somebody, you know, hitting on me. You know, like, and it sounds it sounds kind of basic, right? But it's true. Like, there was this documentary, or it wasn't even a documentary. It was actually just like a short 5 or 10 minute film,
just about this woman, good-looking woman, right? They just had her walk down the streets in New York for 10 minutes or something like that, right? And or no, it was a little longer, but it was like an hour. But in an hour's time, she got hit on like 139 times or something crazy, right? And like stuff like that. Now is that, I mean, it's a compliment, really. I mean, it is. Overall, it's a compliment. But it's like, it also is, I'm sure, it gets freaking annoying, right? Like whistling at you and stuff like that. Like, so do I think that is a, you know, some crazy big, you know, advantage or privilege? No, but it is. Like, I don't, it's not some. Oh, and also I don't have to really worry about, you know, somebody taking advantage of me, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, so there's different things that I believe being a male, you have, you know, advantages over females, you know, in certain situations. I also believe there's, you know, there is the same thing that goes with money, right? You have certain privileges when you have money. Like, I acknowledge that. I live in an unbelievable neighborhood, you know, in Prosper, Texas. And everybody, every single one of my neighbors, we have privilege, right? Now, hey, I'm not saying that we, you know, didn't earn our money. We don't deserve our money. I'm not saying any of that type of stuff, right? But we have certain privileges that go along with having money, right? Better schools, because of our, you know, property taxes and stuff going directly to our schools. So we get great teachers, you know, smaller classroom sizes, all kinds of privileges that go with the fact that we're in our neighborhood, right? So, yes, I absolutely do believe that there are privileges that go along with race, but also gender, also class, and pretty much, you know, all the different factions that go along with it. I mean, some of it is just undeniable, right? You know, to me, but you know, some people, you know, don't, there's different levels of it, right? You know, some people, when they say or think of white privilege, they think, well, white people have this, you know, this like, you know, crazy, like everything in their life is just easier because they're white. Well, no. I don't believe that at all, right? Do I think that there are some advantages to being white in this country? 100%, right? Like, I have a white wife, and there, you know, we've had experiences where it's like, hey, I'm a big black man, right? And she's an average-sized white woman, right? So there's certain things that have happened in our experience that, like, it's clear as day that, you know, hey, she walks into a let's say a car dealership or whatever, and I walk in, you know, sometimes they'll look at me like, oh, well, can you afford this? And I'm like, I absolutely can. but you know, it's, subtleties a lot of times, right? And in those situations, but, you know, just, you know, for me, one thing that I've always, you know, when we talk about, you know, white privileges is, you know, I believe that, you know, there are, you know, certain instances where it is, you know, maybe an advantage, but I do think it is another thing that is possibly overused, you know, and over talked about, that is, you know, sometimes overly used as a, you know, I don't know, not an excuse, but you know what I'm saying? Like something, like just something that's talked about more than maybe. Right. So, well, you know, just like we talked about racism, like where it's like, well, not everything's racist, right? Like some of it's bias, some of it's this. And then same thing with white privilege is like, well, some people identify some things as white privilege. It's like, well, that's not white privilege. That's actually the fact that these people have money. Right. So that's really, that's class privilege. Right. That's socioeconomic privilege, not white privilege. Right. So
I just try to make sure that once again, I identify what it is and how it is specifically to what, like, you know, to specifically to what it is, and not just lump it all under one title. That makes sense?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I had a coach from the sport I'm in, a great brother of mine, you know, and I hate using the terminology, he's a black American, because he's an American, he's a person, he's my brother. I mean, I would bleed for this individual. I don't see color, so these kind of shows are really jacked up sometimes, but we have to do it so other people get a thought process of where we're going. And he brought up the thought of privilege, and he said, you know, the kids in the hood don't have the same privilege as white people. And I disagreed with him. And he got upset. And I said, well, you know what? Let me break it down for you. I said, you talk about that young man from the projects, that young man from the hood that will never have an opportunity. I said, but you're talking to a young man that came from the projects and came from the hood. I said, I lived, if you didn't find a body in the courtyard in the morning, then something was wrong. I said, I chose not to be a product of my environment. I chose to make a difference in my life. I got my degree in mechanical engineering. I got my master's in engineering science. I chose to make a difference in my life. To me, that is privilege in America. The opportunity to rise up by your choice. And I think a lot of people in America don't choose to make that decision. I think a lot of people want to blame the system.
Sorry to cut you off, but do you agree that the opportunity, right, for somebody who is growing up in the hood, right, to actually make it is less likely than someone who is in a different circumstance, like a nicer neighborhood, nicer schools, nicer everything else, more opportunities, more jobs, less crime, less bad stuff going on around you? Do you think that person's plight to reach the American dream of making it, do you believe that person also has a harder road to make it to the American dream? That's a question for you.
Not if they want it bad enough. My honest opinion. Not if they want it bad enough.
So here's where I disagree with you. So if you want it bad enough, right? Let's just have two examples, right? Let's say you have a black kid from the hood, right, who's making all the right choices, doing all the right things, right, but goes to this crappy school, but also he's making his right decisions. Not to say that I'm not saying that he doesn't have an opportunity to not be a criminal. You know what I'm saying? Like, at the end of the day, yes, you do have to still make choices to not be a criminal and not to do certain things. But, you know, when you talk about, you know, equality, you know, that kid, right, who is growing up in the hood, right, which, as you know, I mean, I'm sure you've done enough research, you know, the hoods were – the reason why the hoods exist today are because of some very bias or, if you want to call it, racist – policies in the past, redlining and such, right? So these hoods that exist today, right, that have created these poor schools and poor environments, you know, now he is now, let's say this kid is doing what he's supposed to do, going to school, you know, making sure that he does everything he wants. And let's say he comes up with an awesome business idea, right? And same thing happens in the nice neighborhood, you know. It doesn't have to be a white kid. It can be a Asian kid, right? Asian kid in a nice neighborhood, you know, because everybody else, when you talk about two different scenarios, it's usually a white and a black kid, right? let's just talk about Asian kid, right? So the Asian kid, he grows up in a nice neighborhood, right? And with great friend, you know, with wealth, you know, with money around him, with people, you know, his family has money, you know, because they have homes that got passed down or whatever it may be, or opportunities, whatever, right? Same exact thing. They go through the same exact situation all the way through high school. They get to college. They both actually made the college and do well, right? But now, the reason why, you know, I'm saying this is because, you know, they both have a business idea, right? And they're both like, oh, man, I'm going to go make this happen. I want it, right? Like, I want this to happen really, really badly. I'm going to go make it happen. Well, the person who's coming from a certain environment, who's been surrounded by people with no money, right, with no opportunities, you know, in their neighborhoods or whatever, the chances of him having that business actually come to fruition, I mean, not to say it's impossible. We've seen it. Everybody's seen it.
It's happened with me.
But his – exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's impossible, right? But to say that it's equal – is, to me, is being a little bit, you know, negligent, because you're discounting the advantages of the people who have, you know, grown up around, you know, and have different connections, different money, whatever it may be. How do you start most businesses? You start most businesses with family and friends' money, right? Like, that's kind of the normal way to do it. If your family and friends don't have any money, how are you starting your business, right? Like, the reason why the businesses I've been a part of have been able to make it is because I've been able to fund them, not because they were great ideas, right? Like, a lot of people have great ideas. It's just that, you know, in order to build something great, Google started with somebody's thought process, right? And how did that get to the next level? Well, somebody had to go invest into that kid, into that person who created Google, right? You know what I'm saying? So that's where I'm, you know, that's kind of where I have a lot of passion and a lot of my effort is going towards being able to create more opportunities in the neglected areas of this country, in the parts of the country, in the neighborhoods in the country that, you know, that are feeling the effects of the BS laws and policies that were put in place in the past, right? So being able to go into these neighborhoods and into these areas and saying, hey, like, you know, being able to put together programs and stuff that will, number one, educate, but also bring opportunity to and invest in, you know, these people who, like I said, they go into their family and friends. Their family and friends don't have $50,000 or $100,000 that they can, you know, invest into their startup that might be the next billion-dollar company, right? But they can't even start it. So now they just go work a 9-to-5 job, which there's nothing wrong with 9-to-5, right? But that doesn't build wealth. You know what I'm saying? So that's where now, you know, I'm just getting now you see where my heart is and where we differ in, you know, mindsets, because, like I said, not mindsets, but just how we view different things. Now, you said you come from a rough neighborhood and everything else, and you made it, which is awesome, right? It's not impossible. I've never, you know, people who say it's impossible, they're wrong. People make it out of those situations, but to equate it to everybody else, I feel like it's just misled. I don't feel like that is the full truth, because of there's just so many factors that go into it. It's not just work hard, right? My sister is one of the hardest working people I've ever met. You know, she has opportunities now because of me, but if I wasn't able to help her in those opportunities, she would be, you know, just kind of stuck in a cycle of, let me just get a job and pay my bills, and, you know, wouldn't be able to pass anything down to her kids necessarily, unless she got lucky, right? But, you know, that was really long-winded. I'm sorry, but
oh, no, you're fine.
I'm at. You know, that's where my mindset is. Just, you know, just kind of having an understanding of that. Like, and I get it, because I know another guy who's very similar to you, who came from another country, who has very similar views to you, very conservative guy. And he's like, well, shoot, I made it, so why can't everybody else make it? It's like, well, I mean, yes, I agree. Like, not to say I never want to make excuses for people, right? That's the last thing I want to do, is to say, oh, well, they came from the hood, so, you know, poor them, right? Like, no, I mean, unfortunately, like, we can't control where we're born, what family we're born into, who is our mother, who is our father. We cannot control that. We can control actions, right? We can control our decisions. But someone who is in those neighborhoods definitely has a different road, a more difficult road, than someone who's grown up in Beverly Hills, who is, you know,
I get you.
Exposed.
I get your thoughts.
Sorry. This is my last thought process. Sorry to cut you off. This is because somebody said this the other day. I was like, man, this makes perfect sense. It's the margin of error is so slim when you come from certain places compared to the margin of error whenever, hey, my wife's brother, got into some trouble. Well, guess what? He's still able to be successful, because they had money. They can get out of trouble. You don't have money, you're screwed, right? In certain situations, you are screwed if you don't have money, right? So that's my point, right? And that's where my heart is, and that's where I try to make sure I just continue to have compassion and empathy on those who have the plights that are harder than those who don't, right? I'm all about accountability. If you make certain choices, you should be accountable for them, and that goes across the board. I don't care who you are, and that's how I live my life.
Yeah, I love how you equated that though, because we disagreed, but the way you stated it, I see where you're coming from. Because when you have to work and earn for an opportunity, and you don't want to be stuck in that situation, you have to find ways, means, and accountability to get there. But if you're already born into a situation that is much better than the situation that I came from, then that opportunity is a greater opportunity for you than where I came from or most people come from. I get that. I totally understand that. Now, let me ask you one more question, then we'll wrap things up. Do you think that in some ways the black community, instead of being, and I hate to say this because this is what you're in the sport, but do you think that instead of being that NBA player, that football player, that musician or whatever, do you think that that's not really benefited the black community? Do you think that the change that they've been seeking for 50 years, instead of being in the sport aspect or in other relevant aspects, do you think that they can become a part of the system and create change from within?
Yes. I mean, I think that there are definitely things that the black communities can do a lot better internally that can be a huge part of the solutions that we're seeking. I'm wearing the phrase group economics on the back of my jersey whenever we get back onto the court. And, some people ask, what the heck does that even mean? Or why would you wear that? There's all these other things that you can talk about. And, I'm not a scholar by any means, but I try to do research on different subjects and different, things. And, one of the things I've done some research on is Black Wall Street, right? Black Wall Street existed because, black people were kept out of a lot of, businesses. You couldn't go to a white barbershop. You couldn't go to a white bank. You couldn't go to a white whatever, right? So they said, screw it. We'll just do ourselves. We'll do it for ourselves. And I say that, and I'm not saying, oh, we should, black people should like
have their own subfaction themselves from everybody else in the country or anything like that, segregate themselves or whatever. But I do believe in the power of group economics and being able to, maybe you didn't come from money, right? Maybe I didn't come from money, but maybe if we come together, right, and we have a common goal in mind, right? I say this, with all due respect, but I see it in the Asian community, a lot, right? Where, I've seen it from my own hometown, where, several of the Asian people, family members and stuff, they come together, they get an apartment, they all stay in the same apartment, and they open a Chinese restaurant, and then they all work it, save up money, build another one, right? And now they got two, right? And they come together and they continue to do that and build it out. And all of a sudden, 10 or 15 years later, now they have, a chain, right? Now they can all move out and have their own places. Because guess what? Now they have a chain of Chinese restaurants, But I think that that's one area where, black people can definitely, grow a lot, is in group economics, coming together, building things together. Because economies of scale, definitely can help, build wealth, right? And so, yes. Absolutely, I think that is something that is, been a really big missing piece over the course of, years and time. And, for a long time, the fight was, against being suppressed, right? And then so, but if you think about it, some of these laws and some of these policies, it's not that they were changed 100 years ago. It's like my dad lived under, majority of, Jim Crow and redlining, all that stuff. He was 30 years old whenever they, 35, almost 40, whenever they, 30, whenever redlining got outlawed, right? 30. Not this is my dad, not like my great grandfather, right? So a lot of people, I feel like, don't give enough credit to, not credit, but they don't realize, it's like, oh well, that was a long time ago. It's like, no, it wasn't. Like, it wasn't at all. Like, that directly affected the direct line to me to be able to pass wealth down. That was one generation ago, not five, not four, right? This was not long ago, right, that there was things that were in law that suppressed people of color. So now what do we have to do to, to close this wealth gap and do things, outside? Like, we have to work together, to do certain things, I feel like, and, to build things up, to build wealth, to build businesses and companies and things that, we didn't have before. So like I said, the focus was always in the past on trying to get equal rights, trying to get the opportunity to buy a house in the suburbs, trying to get the opportunity to go to school with our fellow, white patrons, right? Like, it's like, okay, so now all that stuff gets taken away, all those rules. Okay, start taking some of these rules away, start doing this, start doing that, right? Well, we're, like I said, my dad, right, was a part of all that and lived through all that. And now it's like, so now it's about, well, this generation, my generation, I think, is maybe the most important generation, because it's up to us to now implement these things we're talking about, implement the education piece. Now, black people in general, right, not saying all, right, some of us have found ways to make money, right, through sport. Like you said, you talk about through sport, through, entertainment and everything else. That's where a lot of people in the hood, they look up to black people that have made it. That's the ways that black people have made it in general, right? That's what they see. We're the most visible, right? But over this generation needs to be the generation that sets the tone for the rest of the generations moving forward. It's like, no, we should be business owners. We should be doctors, lawyers. We should be everything, right? We should go be successful in every single piece of the world because now we do have the opportunity to do it, right? I couldn't say that for my dad his whole life, right? But I can say that about me, right? So, you know, when people just say it's all about hard work, it's like, I do agree to a certain extent, right? But I do also agree, I do think that there needs to be certain things in place that will help allow, you know, black people to catch up in some ways, financially, right? And some people say reparations. I'm like, well, I'm actually not a big fan of reparations. You know why? Now I say reparations as in an actual physical check, right? I don't think that's the answer, because think about financial education and financial literacy is super important, right? So when someone who doesn't know how to spend money or how to use money, what happens whenever they win the lottery? You know, and I know. What happens? They go broke. Right? So,
yeah.
So the answer, if we go give every poor black family in America $250,000, $350,000, everybody would love it. Absolutely. Everybody would love that. But unfortunately, unless they've had, you know, financial experience with money, unless they've gotten taught, they've went to school, gone to college or whatever it may be, have had some, you know, parents that have found success and figured out ways to, you know, deal with money, there's going to be a, you know, unfortunately a big section. And this isn't a black problem. I'm not saying necessarily just black people. I'm talking about just poor people.
No, it'll be
right?
For all people. Yeah.
Exactly. If that, but I'm saying specifically though, when you were talking about reparations, this would be talking about for black people, right? So to
the answer is not a check.
I
get your point. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think it's tremendous the point that you made, and that's the reason I kind of jumped in here, is because you talk about winning the lottery. You don't have to put any color behind that. Anybody that's never had that kind of money is going to go broke. But
right.
When you talk about reparations, if you know, in your context, if we give everybody a $10,000, $20,000 check, they're going to go out the same way the people that win the lottery, they're going to go broke. It's systematically,
right.
It's not going to change their environment.
Anything. It's not going to change anything. So
to me,
the answer is not a check. It's opportunities, right? It's programs. It's like what they did in Asheville, North Carolina. I don't know if you saw that. The headline the other day said, Asheville, North Carolina, the first city to issue reparations. I was like, hold up, wait a second, what's going on, right? I opened up the article, and it was like, no, they're not writing a check. They're creating programs to help more black people become homeowners, right? Helping more black people become more business owners. This is how we do it, right? This is how, to me, this is how America, you know, can, you know, say, hey, you know what, you know, there's been some awful wrongs done to your people. And there's no denying that, right? That is 100% facts. Look it up, right? Everybody knows that. No, nobody's arguing that some of this crap hasn't happened. It's clear as day. It's part of our history, right? So now, instead of just saying, okay, like, well, tough luck, that sucks for you, like, just move on. No, screw that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I believe it's like, okay, well, shoot, there's a reason for the wealth gap, right? There's a huge wealth gap. And for me, it's like, well, I think that the least that can be done is financial education, literacy, but also programs and different things that can help, you know, give black people opportunities to further themselves. Now, here's the deal, Don. I'm not saying give people homes. You know what I'm saying?
No,
I'm not
saying
give people businesses. I'm saying give people opportunities to do so. So even if you are in the hood, even if you are, you know, in different places, I think that giving them opportunities to further themselves and to make decisions that can further their families. Now we're talking about things that can actually help bring change to these neighborhoods. I believe financial opportunities will bring – no, I don't think – I mean, I just – I know it in my heart, right? Like, you bring financial opportunities to the hood, there'll be less drug dealers. There'll be less freaking all these different other things that people – like robbers, stealers. Like, if you bring people more opportunities – to actually further themselves where they don't feel like they're hopeless, right? You're going to see less crime, less murder, less stealing, less killing, less all of that. And guess what? Which will then affect the whole police situation where people feel like, oh, they're being treated unfairly. Well, yeah, there's more crime in black communities on average, right? Well, guess what? If we take care of financial situations, there will be less crime. Then there'll be less of those interactions. Well, then there'll be less of this George Floyd situation. There'll be less Breonna Taylor situations. There'll be less of all these different situations that are happening. That's why I feel the way I feel, because I feel like it's going to take time. It's not going to be overnight. But if we can attack the financial situation in America, the gap, the wealth gap, and then also, like I said, the opportunity that exists, I feel like that will increase our chances of just being in a better position overall, right? In every single one of these different areas that people are trying to get see change in. Police reform and defund the police and all the different stuff. It's like, okay, right? But really, it's like, to me, it's like, yes, do I think that some of that stuff will help? Yeah, you know, yeah, here and there, right? For sure. Do I think that giving people checks will help? It could help some people, but the long-term fix to me is financial opportunity, financial education, and bringing opportunities for these poor communities to further themselves the right way.
And I agree with that. And I don't like the word retribution myself, because to me, retribution is you can hold the country and the past accountable for certain things. But to me, do you believe or do you feel that people today should be held accountable for the past, for what their certain aspects of ancestry caused or created in America?
Not individuals. I think that's outrageous, right? I don't think that, like, I can't be like, oh, well, you know, my white friend, oh, well, you're white, so you owe me because I'm black. You know, no.
Well, that's what's happening. That's what's happening on the streets, is white people are bowing down because people think they should kiss their feet. I know you don't agree with this, and I know you're not in accordance with this, but this is what's happening. So we need people like you to educate.
Well, I mean,
we need people
you. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying, we need people like you to change the thought process of some of the younger people in just all cultures. Because when I see people saying that you should bow down and kiss my feet, you owe me an apology, you should ask me for forgiveness, to me, that is no different than what other cultures went through in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, like I said, for me to say you owe me an apology for what your ancestors did to my ancestors, I mean, that's pretty, I think that's kind of outrageous, right? But,
yeah.
You know, like you even, you know, alluded to it just a minute ago as well. It's like, do I think that the country as a whole should do something about it? I absolutely do. And like I said, it's not about handouts, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't, there's certain people that say, oh, I want a handout. Yeah. Okay. Like they're welcome to their opinion to want a handout. They're also just the same people that you said that are,
I mean, that's ridiculous. Like, why would you bow down to me or anybody else who looks like me? And, you know, Now, do I think that, you know, that white people having empathy or saying that they are, that they're like, oh man, like that sucks that this happened, you know? No, there's no issue with that. But to me, it's like, do I feel like it's like they have to do it? No. When people say, man, I'm so sorry, like I didn't know, right? Like, because like I said, we talked about earlier about ignorance, right? Certain things people just don't know about, and then when they learn about it, they're like, holy crap.
Oh, sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, so, sorry. One second. Yeah, my headphones went out. Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, some people, they look at a situation, they say, hey, like I said, like a white person, they say they'll watch a movie or they go read a book and they learn something about what happened to black people, over time that they had no clue about, that was not in our history books, in our classrooms, right? And they say, oh my gosh, like, I'm so sorry, right? I don't think that them saying sorry to that and to me or to whoever is like them apologizing to me or bowing down to me. I think they're just saying, holy crap, I'm sorry, I didn't know, right? Like, almost apologizing, like, holy crap, like, I had no clue some of this stuff that you guys are talking about is completely, like, true, right? And so that's what I'm saying. I guess it just depends on where the apology is coming from, because sometimes it's just an empathetic apology, right? It was like, oh, my gosh, like holy crap, like, black people really had to go through that? I am so sorry, right? Not saying I'm sorry for my ancestors doing that to your ancestors, but just being empathetic. We're Christians, right? So, I'd like to think I'd be empathetic, to other people whenever they, a friend of mine just, lost their grandfather the other day. It's like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so sorry. Did I do anything wrong? No, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm just sorry that you're feeling like this, right? And so that is where a lot of the apologies I have seen personally, that's where the space that they're coming from is like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry that this happened to, your grandfather or your great grandfather or whoever, like, oh my gosh, like, I had no clue or whatever, right? So, that's why, for me, that's where I'm at with, like, people apologizing, whatever. But yeah, but to what you said, people bowing down and whatever. It's like, yeah, that's ridiculous. Like, if they're, if people ever make or say that you should apologize for what your ancestors did to them, I would stand with you and say, what the heck are you talking about? That's ridiculous.
I have to agree with you. You're such a tremendous young man, and I'm glad I got to meet you at Kickapoo High School and in Springfield, Missouri, through my son. It's funny because with my last name McGuire, most people think that I'm of Caucasian descent, but I'm actually a Native American Indian, and it's kind of weird because it catches people off guard. I know both sides of the street. As 23 years ago in Springfield, Missouri, it wasn't the most pleasant place to live, considering I lived in Cherokee Estates, which is all white, the richest part of town at the time. And, the Greene County sheriffs didn't really understand why I was there. I used to get pulled over and asked what I was doing in the neighborhood quite often. I used to get, harassed and bullied. But the thing of it is, I stood up to them, because I earned my right to be there. I earned my place in society, and I'm one that will always stand up against authority if I'm in the right. And I think everybody should. If you're in the right, then stand your ground. because I paid my rent. To me, that was cheap to live in Cherokee Estates. Coming from California, that was quite cheap. But I got one more question, if you don't mind, before we go, because I do understand both sides of the road, being where I'm from, and you're from the same place, so you understand what I'm talking about culturally. But there's one thing that kind of bothers me, and it's going to affect you. It's going to affect many in the sport. Now, they're bringing in the Black National Anthem into the sport to be played before the American Anthem. I don't know how you see it, but to me, I think if you do that, then all cultures are going to ask for their anthem to be played before. So my thought process is, if we have to separate and make different national anthems for different cultures, then we should just do away with all anthems and just get to the game or get to the fight or get to whatever it is. I don't know what your thought is on that, but to me, if we're going to allow multiple anthems before a game, and most of a lot of the sport fanatics and fans of the sport are now calling to boycott the NBA, the NFL, and other aspects that want to do this, what is your thought process on just doing away with the anthem altogether and just letting the athletes play?
So the NBA, I'm about 85% sure that we're not doing that unless that got snuck in somewhere that I don't know about. But I think that the NFL doing that is just them trying to do something. No one, honestly, I don't know of one person who was just like, oh, that's awesome, that is a great idea. Like, I don't know where they got that idea from. I'm just going to be completely honest with you. Maybe there are some people who think that's cool, but I don't care. Like, that doesn't mean anything to me personally, because it's a gesture, right? Gestures are cool. Gestures are okay. Like, I don't mind gestures, but also I believe it's actually just going to be for the very first game, right? That's it. And after that, I think that's just regular. As far as I know,
I think
it's the
first 10 games, and I think there's only 15 games to begin with.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. So, like I said, I don't know whose idea that was. I don't like that. Doesn't change anything for me. Like, it doesn't say to me, it doesn't like make me give the NFL any more or less credit for anything. It's just like, oh, okay, whatever. Like, that's what they want to do. But as far as the NBA goes, I don't believe that's a part of our plans at all, unless, like I said, unless they snuck that in without us knowing it, which it would be trying to do it for us, right? But that's not something we've ever asked for or even thought about wanting, right? Because it doesn't mean anything. So to me, I actually completely agree with you. Like, if it's going to be like that, where, you know, oh, well, we need to play the Black National Anthem. It's like, well, let's just not have any national anthems at all. Screw it, right? Let's just go straight to playing sports. Like, it's not important. Like, having, the Black National Anthem before the national anthem, it's just a gesture. It's just them trying to fit in with, you know, everybody else. It's like, now, if you really want to see organizations that are trying to, you know, make an impact, you'll see the organizations that are actually, you know, changing some of their policies, right? And actually trying to, you know, for example, the NBA, you know, NBA offices, I think, comprise of like 15%, you know, African-American employees, right? Which, you know, not bad, right? Not bad. But for them, they were like, hey, you know what? We have a league that is representative of 80% African American, right? And we want, you know, more representation of African Americans in this league overall. That was them, right? We were like, hey, that's a great, we agree, but, you know, we would love to see more, you know, Black GMs, more Black coaches, more, not to say that
white GMs or white coaches are bad. But it's just like, hey, like, we would love to see more African-American people in these positions of power that, you know, that are, like I said, coaching and GMs of all these black players, right? Like, so, and the black people, we're seeing more black people in the office of the NBA. So, you know, for us, you know, it's, you know, it's about actual things, right? Like, we want actual opportunities for people, you know, for black people and for people of color and stuff like that, more so than just the whole, you know, whatever. Even the, you talked about the post earlier, right? Where you the blackout post where people are like giving you crap for not doing a blackout post. Doing a blackout post was a gesture. It means nothing overall, because guess what? If you're not doing anything to actually bring change to the cause, then who gives a crap if you put a black post? That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
That does
not solving a problem.
Yeah, it's not solving anything. So yeah, we're on the same page there for sure.
You know, Anthony, I'm honored you came on the show today because you truly are articulate. Your thoughts are very profound, and you speak from your heart. And that's something that is a rarity these days, to get an intellectual conversation with somebody like you on such a detrimental, you know, thought process in America right now. You know, I catch you on the coach's corner now and then, and I think you know what's coming, brother. I'd be honored if you would lead us out with a prayer.
Absolutely. That's not a problem at all. Lord God, we thank you for this opportunity to come to you in prayer, to have the ability to have a stage to, you know, talk about things that affect your kingdom, that affect your people. You know, all of us are made in your image. So we, as Christians, should represent you well in always, you know, trying to bring people together and unify people, no matter what color they are, no matter what shape or size they are. Help us, God, to always appreciate them, and help us, God, to always look at them through your lens as valuable, no matter if they are in poor neighborhoods, rich neighborhoods, no matter what color they are, what, you know, what religion they are even. Help us, God, to just love them and love them like you would love them. And ultimately, we know that love will and can fix anything in this world. And we just hope that us as Christian men who do have some differing beliefs can show people it's okay to disagree, and you can still lead with love and still accomplish great things, even without having exactly the same viewpoints and looking at the world from a different lens. So just thank you, God, for everything, for health, for wealth, for opportunities you've given us, for everything. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. You know, Anthony, I thank you so much. Me and my son Anthony are going to have to make it down to Memphis and see you on the court. You know, that's one thing that I still haven't done on my bucket list, and that's see you play down there in Memphis. And every time I want to go see you, you get moved to a different team. So it's,
yeah,
like,
no, that's happened a lot. Yeah, it's happened a whole lot,
yeah.
For sure. But, you know, hopefully, I think next year, you know, I probably will go ahead and shut it down after next year. Probably will be my last year next year. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully you can come check me out before I call it a career.
I got to. You're one of the best power forwards in the NBA, bro. Come on now.
Appreciate it. I definitely call myself, hopefully, the best shooting power forward. Yeah, or, you know, that's what I try to take pride in. So, but yeah, I mean,
I'm about to walk into my team dinner, but I do have one last thing I wanted to share with you that, you know, that I know you said it a couple times, and I wanted to, you know, just give you my thoughts on something. So you made the comment that you don't see color, right? And
yes,
I know, yeah, and I know that that comes from a pure mindset, you know, and I know that, you know, the way that you mean that is definitely the right way, you know, but I feel like, honestly, I think it's okay to see color, right? And, but appreciate it, right? Appreciate the color, right? Because it's, we're all made in God's image. So if you don't see and appreciate my color, you're not seeing and appreciating God's creation, right? So I just wanted to throw that out there to give you a different perspective on, you know, on that thought process of not seeing it, right? Like, I think you should see it. I think you should want to see it. And not from a judgmental standpoint, but from an appreciation standpoint, right? Appreciate, you know, what God has made, all different shapes and sizes, and say, hey, that's awesome, you know, that God made black, white, Chinese, Asian, Latino, Native American, all of it, right? Appreciate all of it and love it all the same.
Appreciating its beauty.
Exactly. I just wanted to leave you with that, man. That was the one thing I wanted to make sure I talked to you about.
Hey, most definitely. I'm honored you brought that up, you know, because we should all see things in their beauty and for their differences. You know, Anthony, it was an honor to have you on the show. You go eat. I know you did this in between practice and dinner. I truly, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for coming on the show and sharing who you are and your thoughts with the world. You truly are a blessed young man in life. God bless you, and thank you for coming on the show.
Appreciate you, man. Have a good one.
You too, brother. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Anthony Lamar Tolliver from the Memphis Grizzlies. I've known him since he was a kid. Went to school with my son, you know. Take the show for what you want. I think he's a very articulate young man. I really don't see color, but the way he puts it, we do have to respect things for their beauty and their walk, but we can see it without, I guess you could say, a deceitful perception is the best way to put it. You know, Anthony is different than most of my guests that I've had on talking about BLM. He sees it in different complexities, different layers, and a different thought process. With that being said, I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA with Juan Martinez, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch Duran and Juan Ramirez, the 86ers with Alfred and Freddie, Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice, and One More Round with Jacob Stitch Duran and Mark. And the last but not least is Blackout with Rodney Edwardson. On that note, I want to thank you. Have a good day, and God bless.
You all appreciate it. When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Shed tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hell, hugging on my mama from a jail cell.